Well, hello everybody, and we're going to begin again with the part two of Rays and the Initiations. We had a little experiment with number 34. It lasted only about 44 or 45 minutes. It's been a while, about a year and a little more since I have undertaken these, and so it's taking a little time to get back in the saddle here. We close with the idea that only one of the threads of the threefold Antikarana passes through the egoic lotus, and we hypothesize that that would be the creative thread, but we are open to correction here if we discover it in the text. It's certainly not the life thread, I think, which comes directly from the monad. The other two threads relate themselves directly with the triad, I suppose the consciousness thread and the life thread, and hence eventually with the monad, the source of triadal life. This is true of the individual and of humanity as a whole, and humanity itself is building the Antikarana towards Shambhala. Interestingly enough, the possibility of humanity's contact with Shambhala, at least in some attenuated form, now exists. And the effect of this alignment can be seen demonstrating in the world at this time. And this, we understand, is somewhat complicating the issue for the hierarchy. So let us proceed here with number 35. Now, he tells us that this is a rather unexpected responsive activity. It's as if humanity, which was really so far behind, has somehow managed to move ahead. Okay, let's see if I can get this done properly. Yeah, that's it. Okay. So this rather unexpected responsive activity has necessitated much increased activity on the part of the hierarchy. Hierarchy composed of adepts is ever, shall we say, adaptable. In order to offset the consequences of any premature inflow of the will force, in a way we can say that what did happen during the Second World War could be considered a premature inflow, at least the way it was used. And there were discussions in hierarchy, we are told, maybe some 200, 300 years ago, about whether the occultism and the ageless wisdom should be allowed closer to humanity. Some of the hierarchy felt yes, others felt it was not so. But those who wanted to bring it closer were given permission, we are told by Sanat Kumara, to do so. Now, there are probably some in hierarchy who feel that the whole experiment may be premature. Let us see how humanity responds. After the third initiation, when the soul body, the causal body, starts to dissipate, interesting that it starts at that time, and it is the knowledge petals which thus begin to dissipate, giving over at the next initiation or even before that to the development of the intuition. After the third initiation, when the soul body, the causal body, begins to dissipate, the line of relation or of connection can be and is direct. Now, that is more direct, let us say, more direct connection with the will force coming directly from the triad via the Antikarana. The initiate then, this is after the third degree, stands in the ocean of love. It has a very Piscean kind of feel to it, as Pisces is that particular part of our zodiac, which is a cosmic decanate most associated with love. Stands in the ocean of love, and through him pours that love. We realize that Venus, a great planet of love, is prominent at the time of the third initiation. It is not just a fifth-ray planet, it's a sixth-ray and second-ray planet on its highest levels. So the Sirian system of initiation then is open to the one who has taken the third degree in the way intended, and not open to those who have veered off on the left-hand path. The initiate then stands in the ocean of love, and through him pours that love. His will is love. Will is in a way secondary to love in this solar system and on this planet, at least temporarily, until the monadic ray of this planet becomes occultly powerful. His will is love, and he can safely work, for love divine will color all his will, and he can wisely serve. That's such a beautiful statement, and it tells us that no matter what our rays may be, it is the great ray of love wisdom which we must eventually serve, and which stands superior at this time to the expression of all the other rays. All the other rays are subsidiary to it. So we begin to realize that we truly do enter the soul of love at the time of the third degree, when we can focus at will within the causal body, within the egoic lotus, within the temple not made with hands, eternal in the heavens, found on the higher mental plane, and at this point on the second level of the higher mental plane, no longer the third, where the causal bodies of non-initiates are found. Love and intelligence then become the servants of the will, and that will is love. The will is to express the divine love of our solar logos and also our planetary logos with the second ray soul. Love and intelligence then become the servants of the will. Now, let us see here. Okay. Soul energy and personality force contribute to the experience of the monad. They are extensions of the monad. They have not yet been dissipated nor absorbed into the triadal life, at least at this point. Soul energy and personality force contribute to the experience of the monad in the three worlds of life service, and indeed in these lower three worlds, which constitute the dense physical body of our planetary logos. That is where our service lies, a redemptive service intent on redeeming the unredeemed matter of the previous chain and the previous solar system. And then the age-long task of the incarnating spiritual man is finally accomplished. Well, perhaps not until the fifth degree and even beyond, but at least at the third degree, we are definitely on our way, selflessly, increasingly. Okay. He is ready for nirvana. Now, this is interesting because the nirvanic plane is the atmic plane, also called the spiritual plane and also called the plane of spiritual will. It has a number of different names. Let's take a look here. Yeah, it is the atmic plane, the third cosmic ether, the plane of the third logos, the plane of Brahma. It is the spiritual plane. It is actually the nirvanic plane. But when we think about the nirvana of the Buddha, we would also like to include the monadic plane, because he, in his monadic nature, received a cosmic touch, being a third-ray monad, a touch of the cosmic mental plane. Anyway, he is ready for nirvana, which is but the way into new fields of spiritual experience. This is so important, and of divine development. In other words, if we can really understand this, it is not... It is not the end, but the beginning. So many people seem to think that nirvana is endless rest, and any realization achieved in nirvana is final, where it is really but the beginning of what is called by Evans Wentz the beginning of the endless way. So it is a new field of activity, and not at all a place of final and not to be transcended rest. Not a field of rest. It is a field of great realization, but also a field of new spiritual experience. There's nothing. Let's put it like this, if we can. There is nothing final about nirvana. Okay. All right. So new fields of spiritual experience and divine development, incomprehensible as yet to the initiate of the third degree. Yes, even to the initiate of the third degree. We keep on looking at these initiatory stations as if there was something quite ultimate about them, but they are, let's just say, merely stages along the way. And even though they may seem hard to attain, and they are demanding and hard to attain, still they are simply the beginning of something that lies ahead of them, and which is even more encompassing, more inclusive, more revelatory. Of course, I do believe the universe is finite, though the source of the universe is absolutely infinite. So there will always be a kind of a prolaic conclusion to any universe. But as vast as any universe is, whatever can be achieved within it is but an infinitesimal compared to the absolute infinitude. The absolute infinitude of absolute infinity. So this way is revealed only when the Antikarana, talk about incentive, huh, is built and completed, and the man becomes focused in the triad as consciously as he is now focused in the threefold lower nature. And that is the qualification of the true initiate and of the true master. The fourth degree initiate is focused buddhically. The fifth degree initiate is focused atmically. The third degree initiate, although the lowest part of the triad, is still within the realm of the higher mental plane, which is technically the dense physical body of the soul level, still he is focused in the triad monastically, in terms of the higher manas and the abstract mind. So we can see how very important this abstract matter is, this subject, this necessity to build the Antikarana, which is difficult to understand, but the Tibetan has given us various images and visualizations which, even though perhaps not true to the occult nature of the bridge, at least is a successful way of gaining access to the powers and capacities associated with this bridge of light, we really are trying to build our way into the higher worlds, and if we do not undertake this in a conscious manner, we shall remain stuck in the relationship between soul and personality, not even able to focus in the soul per se, yet alone beyond it. So a great enterprise is here presented to us, and we have to understand the importance of undertaking this enterprise and leave our comfort zones behind. Then and only then is the true dualism of the divine nature apparent, and the illusory duality disappears. Well, what is the true dualism? True dualism is spirit matter. There are various types of illusory dualisms. Even the dualism between the soul and the personality is semi-illusory. The personality must absorb the nature of the soul and then contrast that with the higher of the dualities, which is the monad itself. Then the true dualism of spirit matter appears. In a way, when you look at the one and the six, spirit is found, let's see, I wonder how tall this is here. Well, I'm just going to assume that we can see something up here. But the lower six planes of the cosmic physical plane are in a way matter, and spirit is represented by the logoic plane. From another perspective, we can say that spirit is represented by the highest two planes, and the five lower planes are considered to be material and Brahmic. In a way, the monad is the soul of this setup. We might look at it this way: spirit on the logoic plane, soul, consciousness on the second plane, and matter on the lower five planes. Okay, well, some of these we're going to be able to see fairly clearly, and others maybe not as clearly. What happens if I do this? Do I dare? Aha, that's better. It gives me the full screen. And then if I want to escape from that, okay, well, now I see it quite clearly. Anyway, I understand the method. Now, that's not something that has to be transcribed, obviously. Okay. So then moving on, through the unfolding, okay, then you have spirit matter life form, he says. For this, the triple experience of the unfolding consciousness is only preparatory, and by the triple experience, we mean personality, soul, spirit, monad. Okay. I do long to get back to the ability to just type in a slight abbreviation and have it appear. I'm looking forward to that soon. Whoops. Spirit and matter. Okay. Something has happened here. So I'm going to go back and see if I know where I am. Okay. So anyway, I said here, personality, soul, and monad, spirit. And, okay. Right. Through the unfolding consciousness, the initiate, I have to stop here for a second. Okay, that correction has been made. Through the unfolding consciousness, the initiate knows the significance of life. There's that word, you know, it can mean vitality, it can mean absolute essence, but let's just say it can mean being as well. It's the being aspect which lies behind or beyond consciousness. Through the unfolding consciousness, the initiate knows the significance of life and the uses of form. We cannot identify with it. We have to be the abstracted spiritual manipulator of the form, which is, after all, but a state of consciousness. The initiate knows the significance of life and the uses of form, but stands, and this is the point, completely unidentified with either. Now, I think he does not mean then life in the absolute sense, because we would want to be identified with being, with the great substratum. Sometimes life simply means the vitality which animates form. Though blending these dualities in himself into a conscious synthesis. Now the question is the initiate yet identified with the greater life, or does he mean by life some lesser type of energy? Anyway, there is the sense that the initiate can understand form and the vitality which animates the form. He can understand, in a way, the etheric physical nature. Maybe it is the fourth degree initiate who can understand the emotional nature, and the fifth degree initiate who can finally understand the mind. There is that kind of progression, I think. The attempt to convey, and here's where the Tibetan is handicapped, okay, as he often says, the attempt to convey his, the initiate's, state of mind in words that but limit and confuse leads to apparent contradictions, and this is one of the peculiar paradoxes of the occult science. So we have to, should we say, sort of read with the third eye, rather than the eyes of dualism. So there is a little ambiguity in this term life. You will find it in the teaching. Sometimes it means vitality, and sometimes it means being, and sometimes it means absolute substance itself. Do the above imparted facts make sense to you? Well, that's for each of us to answer. Let's just say maybe a little. We cannot be presumptuous here. The Tibetan is attempting a difficult task because we don't have the experience and we don't have the words to describe the experience. So we have to proceed humbly, I would say, as much as may be possible for us, and gather the necessary thought and sensitivity which will reveal to us the nature of thus far unknown states of consciousness. Have they meaning for your mind? I think not. Well, then why is he writing? Maybe he has hope for us later when we will reread, or for those who will come, or for us in a later incarnation when we are more intelligent and more sensitive. You have not yet the needed equipment, he tells us, through which the type of implied awareness can work. He's not really describing it, he's implying it, if our intuition can grasp it, or the realization of that true self-consciousness, capital S, which would produce in you an understanding reaction. So this is true soul consciousness. So what does he do then? He says, I simply make the esoteric assertion. Okay, and for those who think that the Tibetan is already passé, he's writing so much for the future that we can barely grasp his meaning. I simply make the esoteric assertion, later will come the apprehension of the truth, and that consequent energizing, which always comes when any abstract truth is truly appreciated and assimilated. And here he's giving us an important piece of information. Sometimes we may feel that as we study the great abstractions or that which is presented to us as abstraction, it's simply a mental activity. But in fact, we learn that the apprehension of these higher states of realization have an energetic effect on our lower nature. I'm sure that many of you have had the experience of being energized by an idea, excited, enthused, stimulated by the apprehension of an idea when you really grasp it, when it is really intuitively impressive upon you. I've had that experience. So this is more than simply an intellectual grasping. It's a real assimilation, a real appreciation, a real absorption. And to study the greater abstractions that have to do with the planetary mind and how all things are coordinated, etc., is not just some futile intellectual exercise. It will have a spiritualizing, energizing effect in the lower worlds, and we shall become, what's that word, you know, inspired. But the time has not yet come for the comprehension of the above information. Well, here he is writing in the Rays and the Initiations, probably assuming that this book will be around for a while and will be properly digested later. Disciples and aspirants grow through the means of a presented vision. Unattainable as yet, but definitely an extension of the known and previously grasped. So we are given something that leads to revelation and realization. The vision leads to revelation and realization, even if it is not yet either of these. Okay, unattainable as yet, but definitely extension of the known, and that's what he's out to do, to present to us something that will extend what we know or think we know, what we grasp or think we have grasped. So he will always, and the second ray does this. This is the quality of the hidden vision, which is involved with the second mode of instilling an appreciation of deity or reality. So the second ray types under Jupiter, under Venus, under Neptune, they do present a new vision, and as we strive towards the assimilation of that vision, we grow towards revelation and realization, the realization of the revelation, which is always there, though not appreciated because our equipment is not yet sufficient. Such is the mode, he says, of evolution, for it is ever a pressing forward towards the sensed, ever pressing forward towards the sensed. And by that, of course, he doesn't necessarily mean only the five senses, but their higher extensions, which indeed lead to the higher cities and powers and capabilities of which we will one day be capable. Today, through human effort, the hierarchical endeavor, a great alignment through human effort and hierarchical endeavor. These two things are needed, just as for the for the individual, both personality and aspiration towards the soul are needed. Both are needed. A great alignment and linking up is taking place. This is, shall we say, the province of Mercury, which is the planet directly or most associated monadically with humanity. So this linking up is taking place, a great alignment, and we would expect it in the fifth root race, because Mercury has in its higher reaches, I believe, a very high number five, probably giving over to a number three, one of the rays of aspects monadically. It's possible to have two monadic rays, as I've tried to demonstrate in other discussions, just as it's possible to have two soul rays, one of which is superior and one of which is subray. So through both human effort, personality effort, and hierarchical endeavor, those, the endeavor of those who are souls, a great alignment and linking up is taking place, and monad, soul, personality are being more directly related than has hitherto been possible. Let's call this the relating of a great triplicity. We're all involved in this, although the higher level, the monadic level, is still, well, even the true soul level is still rather out of reach, and the monadic level certainly so, and just begins to be within reach for the third degree initiate. One reason for this is that there are present in incarnation upon the planet many more initiates of the third degree than ever before. And interestingly enough, the number of fifth degree initiates will be greatly increased, and they will be required. So more third degree initiates than ever before, and I suppose that if there is coming the need for more fifth degree initiates, I suppose the fourth degree initiates as well will have to number much more greatly than at present is the case. There are many more disciples being prepared for the third initiation, and in this third, strictly human race, we're not counting the first two races, the Adamic and Hyperborean races, which were not yet individualized. And in this third strictly human race, the Aryan, using this term in its generic sense, and not as related to consciousness, and not in its prostituted German connotation, which was very materialistic, actually. So we have to be careful how we use this term, Aryan. The three aspects of the personality are now so potent that their magnetic influence and their creative effect are making the building of the Antikorana an outstanding achievement, thus linking and aligning the three aspects in man. We may remember the this seems to suggest the earlier method of individualization, a process between the aspiring animal man and his higher nature without the intervention of the solar angel. That's one thing I'm really going to miss. I just used to write SA and solar angel would appear. Okay. So there is a very magnetic relationship occurring because of the power of the personality, and it will invoke and actually evoke the attention of the higher aspects of man, namely his monad triad, with, of course, the inter mediary assistance of the solar angel, however making itself increasingly unnecessary. The same is true. You see, what is true of the human being is also true of the three divine centers in the planet, which embody these divine qualities, Shambhala, Hierarchy, and Humanity. And there are indeed the three links showing the relationship between these three, the three triangles. And here is where we can see the kinds of relationships that are forming. The past had very little connection of humanity with Shambhala, and Hierarchy was the actor, not humanity. The present shows Shambhala evoking humanity, with Hierarchy striving towards Shambhala and humanity striving towards Hierarchy. There are even those today who are striving towards Shambhala, but they would be considered members of the Hierarchy. And finally, a reciprocal relation between all the three are coming in the future. So that's the relationship there between the divine centers that exemplify the three divine qualities that we find in the microcosm. These are now closely aligned, though not completely aligned. Closely but not completely. Let's put that in. Closely but not completely. Thus producing a fusion of energies, which is causing an inflow of the spiritual will, as well as the demonstration of the destroyer aspect. And I think, you know, we can see that inflow of the spiritual will from Shambhala. These are, these diagrams, especially the central one here, represent a good depiction of Shambhala impacts. As I say, there are those who are striving towards Shambhala among humanity, but really they have to be almost members of the Hierarchy before they can really do that. And notice that Hierarchy itself has not adequately striven towards Shambhala to the extent that there is any kind of real reciprocity. Interesting that Shambhala's major focus is the stimulation of humanity at this time, and apparently not so much the stimulation of Hierarchy, which is aspirational towards Shambhala. So they are now closely aligned, thus producing a fusion of energies, which is causing an inflow of the spiritual will. Remember its atmic nature, and actually its atmic nature is its lowest nature in a way. Monadic and logoic planes are also centers of spiritual will, as well as the demonstration of the destroyer aspect, which we are witnessing in humanity at present. Let's just say that many old forms have to go. The Tibetan talked about the value of the First World War clearing certain depths of form which would have prevented humanity from moving forward. Well, I suppose this was also the case with the Second World War, because it cleared the way for the decision made by the Christ to return in physical form. So the destroyer aspect is at work, and although those of us who are attached to form may fail to see its beneficence, it is, in fact, a beneficent Shambhalic impact. When Shambhala impacts the third center, the human center, the results are drastic, but liberating and clearing the way to life more abundant. The Tibetan says, I have here indicated much of interest. I have pointed out and indicated a way. Now, the word way is different from path. let's see. So let's put that down from path. It's the way of higher evolution. A path, a kind of a path that transcends the ray paths. And there are different paths along this great way, but the way leads to Shambhala and beyond at the sixth initiation. So I've indicated a way. I have related in consciousness hierarchy and Shambhala. Who knows what the relation might be on the more energetic level, but let us say that those in hierarchy are certainly striving at this point to achieve a higher form of Shambhalic consciousness. This signifies a great and critical moment in human affairs, one that has been anticipated, I suppose, since the coming of Shambhala to Earth, or the combination of Shambhala hierarchy, and an opportunity hitherto, an opportunity hitherto unparalleled in history. An opportunity hitherto unparalleled in history. There have been many great opportunities, many great teachers, many great unfoldments, but our present time, if we could but realize it, offers to humanity the possibility of a huge step, a much needed step, given the retrogression which occurred on the moon chain. A great and critical moment in human affairs, and an opportunity hitherto unparalleled in history, and this is a history that has lasted millions of years. The need for a due appreciation of this will be evident and should incite, I guess, inflame. You know, we're talking about incentive here. This is a incentive and inflaming and firing should incite all who read to renewed effort and to fresh endeavor. And so often we do allow ourselves to simmer down and we do not develop the or cultivate the striving attitude. Let us strive fierily. This is what Master Moria is always saying, and the Tibetan is giving us a reason, because our opportunity is so tremendous at this time that we would certainly have deep regrets if we did not take advantage of the possibilities. Students must seek to meet all the planetary changes and opportunities with corresponding changes in their own lives. Meaning, it's not enough just to read about these things. We have to, under the influence of Uranus, we have to change. This is a Uranian activity. And we must change along with pari passu, along with the possibility of change offered by Shambhala and hierarchy. Okay. They must seek those new attitudes and those new creative approaches. There's the creative thread at work. There's new types of consciousness at work, which will result not alone in the building of the individual Antikorana, but also in the fusion of the many radiant strands, which will produce those connecting cables, not just strands, but cables. So this is the value of our group work, and sometimes in our meditations you notice that we consider our individual strands and we blend them together into a kind of a cable or a cone which can reach up into the spiritual triad. Of course, the word up is just figurative. ascend in vibration, we might say, into the spiritual triad and towards the monad, which will produce those connecting cables, speaking symbolically, which will relate the planetary centers and present the medium along which can pass the fiery will and the predetermined purpose of God. So let's say there are now five major planetary centers, and they must be fierily interrelated, and this requires our own anti-Corona building and group anti-Corona building and national anti-Corona building, group and national anti-Corona building. How much easier to just write ANT and have anti-Corona appear. This will bring about the reconstruction of the manifested worlds, as we would expect in a seventh ray age. And this, and in this task, each and every one of you can have his share. So there is the great incentive for all of us to meet the unparalleled opportunity now being presented. Let's see how far we will go here. Well, you know, just a little bit more, I think, even though I'm not quite making the hour on these programs, I think I should stop where the text seems to change. So it says, let us now take up our next main point in this section and indicate the technique for the construction of the anti-Corona. I'm remembering, you know, that I've been working on this maybe 40 years, something like that. And I'm remembering going to an important 1975 Shambhala Impact Lucis Trust meeting and somehow doing some initial reading concerning the rays and initiations just at that point. Well, 40 years is a drop in the bucket when it comes to making the kinds of subtle contacts that he is inviting us to make and which he says are necessary for us to make. So the technique for constructing the anti-Corona, this we will take up, and this will constitute, he does not speak with exaggeration. Let's just say an intensely practical teaching for which all that I have hitherto given should prove a firm foundation, an intensely practical teaching. So I think, you know, that even though maybe these programs are not designed to be on one-hour slots on television or something like that, we'll have to just stop where we stop. So this will be here, the end of Rays and Initiations webinar commentaries, number 35, also on the 7th of January, 2017. And we will, beginning of Rays and Initiation webinar commentaries, number 36, and maybe, if we're lucky, on the 8th of January, 2017. So, for the moment, I'm just concentrating on the text and the little picture of myself speaking, which is sometimes in the upper left-hand corner, is not there. It may return. I will see how it all works out. Okay. We're into a very deep subject here and something which distinguishes the type of meditation which Master DK teaches from many other meditative methods. It is abstruse. It is abstract. It is subtle. We have no proper language for it, and we have no entirely necessary experience for it. but we forge ahead, listening carefully to what he is telling us, and we will do our best to assimilate these subtleties and make these abstract studies the source of energizing in our ordinary personal life, spiritualizing that life to a great degree. So this will be the end of Rays and Initiation Webinar Commentary number 35.